You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast, brought to you by SpannersReady.com, We Live F1, and BadgerGP.com, F1 isn't boring. I'm your host, Spanners Ready, and I'm joined all the way back from Gay Paris, it's Matt to Rumpets. How's it going, Matt?
It's going fine. It's going delightful, except for the fact that I am back from Paris, where I would frankly much rather be at this point.
Everyone who comes back from Paris comes back smug and like pseudo-cultured and thinks like, oh, everything's so lame. In Paris, they do this. In Paris, the trains, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, well, I'll put it to you this way. I came back from a week in Paris, and on my first day coming home late at night, what was normally a 25-minute commute took me well over an hour. So, yeah, when it comes to running the metro, gotta hand it to the Parisians. They got it down.
Anyway, family all enjoyed it. You're all cultured up and ready to sort of increase the culture level of the US a little bit.
Yeah, I think so. I think we've expanded the girls' horizons and given her some new perspectives, which probably most Americans could desperately use right about now.
And let's fill some more time finding out what you're drinking. Oh, no, because it's not really the off-season anymore at all, is it? We are fully back in F1. F1's back, baby.
Yes, F1 is back. We've had some testing. We've seen some cars on a track, and they even had a truck race to make it all interesting the last day.
Just quickly, though, talking about cars on track or carts on track, I want to try and use this microphone now to try and get some advice from dads who've got their kids into karting. So excuse me, guys, while I use this for my own benefit, but I took the lad to the Rye House mini track with his mate, and we had a fantastic afternoon's karting, and it's amazing how competitive the kids get straight away and how they instinctively know that they've got to get the inside line, that they need to bash past people, that they need to defend, and that they instinctively get the need to be the cart in front.
Racing, that's the beautiful thing about racing. Where do you want to be? Oh, in front. Yeah. So everybody can figure that out.
They got it. But the dads were worse. I mean, I was there with a very mild-mannered accounts manager for a retail firm. Never seen him get excited. But as soon as his kid was like barging up the middle of my kid, oh, there was death threats. There was impassioned, you know, blood was boiling. It's an amazing thing to watch. And now I'm definitely going to be a kart dad. So unfortunately, not only do I have to buy a go-kart for him, I also have to buy a cat for Nicola to distract her so that when she asks about the trailer in the cart in the front garden, I go, look at the cat, look at the pretty cat.
I can tell you from personal experience, this works great.
For those of you just finding us, we are an independent podcast hosted by SpannersReady.com. We aim to bring you race reviews before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. This show is safe for work. We're keeping it clean here so you can play this with kids in the background, in the car, or at work. This week, we were going to waffle, but since we've got such an esteemed cast, we are going to do some proper F1 testing reviews. So, without further ado, editor-in-chief, I think, or editor of Badger GP, did I just overly promote you, Craig Norman?
That's fine. I can put it on a business card. That's great. Thank you, Spanners.
And we're joined fresh back from Barcelona, our very own Chris Stevens, but also Formula Spies Chris Stevens, and also Lean Angle Podcasts Chris Stevens.
So many little additions there. I love it.
Craig, are you into karting at all? Are you a karting man?
I have been karting. I have been known to kart. But I haven't put my child in a kart yet because he's only 7 months old. But you'll get there.
Oh, honestly, the time between 7 months old and six, where I'm now seriously thinking about buying a kart, it's just been torturous hell. And I put him in a go-kart way too early. I think about 3.5 or 4. And he crashed loads. It was a disaster. And I was like, no, put the brakes on that. Just wait. Be patient.
Well, maybe I'll put it by the end of the week,
because I was thinking about obviously we've been trying to do a Missed Apex podcasting karting race, you know, invite listeners down, invite contributors down to do it. I have been wanting to go to Rye House. I will say it is a great course. I've been working on them to cut me a deal, and they won't right now, so, and I don't think it is going to happen, but you know, but they did look after the boy yesterday. So there's two I'm looking for at the moment, which is Rogue Racing in Aylesbury. But the cart's quite
down
quick.
The road from me. That's not far from me at all.
The cart's quick, and it's a good place. But the only problem with me is it's just a very narrow track, and I lack the skill to overtake on a very narrow track.
So is this the one that's got the banked corner?
Yes, at the end. So you come out, you come from high up from the second level, come all the way down, and then you come into a hairpin that's on a hill. So you immediately hit the hill and it kind of breaks for you and you just flip into the next turn. So yeah, it's a good track, but I'm not skillful enough to race it. And then on the other hand, I'm looking at the Teamworks one in Letchworth, which possibly not as fast carts. They're the electric ones, but the track is so wide that you can have a proper like Mario Kart style brawl.
And the great stuff about the electric karting, which I've done before, is you get the power instantly. So you just hear people laughing because there's no engine note because it's electric, and you hear screeches and tires, and people just you can stand on the sidelines and people just pulling drifts around corners because it's just instant power.
So it was good fun. So I'm still torn. So if anybody has any suggestions of places basically in the Bedfordshire, just north of London area for us to do an event, or if indeed you work for a venue and you think you might be able to look after us for an event, please do get in touch. Email me at spannersready@gmail.com. Hey, let's have some big dirty news.
Big dirty news.
The big dirty news is that F1 is back. We are testing. We've been watching the testing. All of us sat at our computers pretending to work, actually watching the BBC or Formula Spy live streams, watching the news coming up. The only day I missed it, I had an all-day meeting on Thursday, and I did ask the room, are there enough Formula One fans in here to justify having the live stream up on the projector? There was some like nervous giggles, but I could tell a few people also wanted to do that. But jealous, Chris, the only time I've ever found myself jealous of you is you were actually in Barcelona this week reporting for Formula Spy.
Yeah, I was. It was quite an interesting experience, really, because it's about 10,000 times bigger than any other paddock I've ever been in. But there's also like 10,000 times more people.
So is this the first time you've reported live on Formula One?
Yeah. So basically my role at Formula Spy has been kind of home support. So the guys who are actually in the paddock, they will send me stuff to write. They'll send me the quotes. And so I basically do the things that they're basically too busy to do. The goal has always been to kind of get me into Formula One. It's kind of just been kind of budget dependent, basically.
So you were the brew boy. You were sweeping up in the staff room, and I think that's perfectly fair for a man of your age. And now you've been promoted, and you're up there with the big boys. So were you starstruck? Were you blown away, or did you find yourself at home very quickly?
No. The interesting thing about sort of paddocks is that, you know, they are home to me. You know, it's like the pit lane. You get a sense of belonging, and you can't be starstruck, really, because you'll look like an idiot, basically. But I'm sort of used to it by now, basically, so I don't tend to sort of get giddy about it.
P Wright in the chat room says Sparkles does Spain. I like it. Sparkles does Spain. So when you were doing Spain, what was your impression then of the 2017 cars? Because there's been so much talk about these are bigger, better, louder, faster. This is Formula One. This is raw. The drivers are going to be wrestling with it. You know, what did you notice? Did these things look a handful? Did they look planted?
I think, first of all, on the kind of aesthetics, the studio shots and the pictures anyone's seen online, they do not do them justice whatsoever. These cars look phenomenal in person, and on the track they look incredible. It's like somebody's kind of turned the clock back about 10 years. I've seen you know, as the cars, they go away from you on sort of like corner exit, it's like watching the old 2003, 2004, 2005 cars. It's really, really cool.
So we have a bright shiny object to distract us from the utter lack of racing that we're going to see this year then.
Well, see, this is the thing. This is the really interesting thing, isn't it? Because if you take a kind of logical stand on the aerodynamics, then yeah, supposedly the racing is going to be worse. But I would say there is also the issue of the tires, which has now been resolved, in that drivers can actually push during races, and that will encourage racing, I feel.
Great. So one-stop races where people can't follow. I cannot wait to see that. That's going to sound like, oh, wait, is it Monaco I'm thinking? They're spanners.
Yep. Well, this is it. You worry about Monaco because that's the worst one. But come on, Chris, you're dying to tell us why it's not all doom and gloom.
Well, the interesting thing about the tires is that apparently it's not so much less degradation, but the drivers can just still push on them as the tire wears off. Yeah, I think the degradation has come down slightly, but I think there could still be a strategy element in that. But the drivers won't be, you know, afraid to get too close to the driver in front in case they shred their tires, which I think is only going to make things better and more exciting.
That's a really good... Sorry, Craig. Go on, you go.
And let's not forget we've still got the three tire compound strategy this year. So they've still got to pick from three tire compounds, which did produce some good racing last year. So if you're going to have these guys pushing on different strategies, so you're going to have the softer tires versus with the shorter, with the multi-stops versus the harder tires on one stop, you're going to have guys in close competition at different speeds.
Blackout 19 says, we have a new technical reason why there's no overtaking to take us through the first three months. It's totally different to previous years. Chris, is it so different to previous years?
I don't think it's so different. I think it's different to what we've grown accustomed to in the last couple of years. But I mean, the grip coming out of these cars is just phenomenal. The drivers are just throwing these cars into the corners with the extra aero and the mechanical grip, but the torque demands from the engine, they do still seem to be exceeding the limits of the car on corner exit. So they seem to have pretty good traction, but the rear does kind of still seem a bit twitchy as they come out, which I'm quite happy about, because I was worried they were going to look slightly too planted.
Apparently some more than others struggling with that, right?
Oh, yeah. No, definitely.
We'll get to Williams. We'll get to Williams in due course. The shark fins are meant to make the cars much more stable in the corners. Did you notice anything physical about that? Did you see them? They don't make them yaw less, do they? But when they are yawing, they apparently mean that the downforce remains instead of getting disrupted.
Well, see, this is the thing, and I think the new tires have had an effect on this as well, plus the extra aero, is that when you do lose it, you lose it big time. The cars that had less downforce, they're almost kind of easier to slide. So you have a moment and you're kind of able to catch it. You'll lose time, but you can still catch it. With these new cars, once it goes, that's it. You're gone. The shark fins are an interesting one, because I think their main purpose is to kind of keep some stability. But the T-wings that we've seen sprouting on top of them, they're all about, you know, improving airflow over the rear wing. And we've seen some interesting variations on that. So on the first day of the test, Williams and Haas sprouted them on their shark fins. Mercedes came up with a double stacked T-wing that everyone got very excited about on the second day.
Awesome. So,
yeah.
Matt.
Yeah, I was going to say, and that was due to about a 5-centimeter gap that the regulators, either purposefully or not, depending upon your view of the regulators, left in the regulations. But I think what's interesting is going to be not so much straight line, but when we start seeing crosswinds between the larger barge boards and the shark fins, we could see some very interesting results on the cars, because that's a lot more surface area than they're used to having, especially at tracks where crosswinds tend to happen.
Well, Valtteri did say that these new cars, they're definitely more susceptible to wind. Did anyone see him have a huge slide out of turn 9 during his race sim on Tuesday? Just about kept out of the barriers, and that was because of a gust of wind. So I do definitely think he's right about that. The thing about the T-wings, though, is that I think there's grounds for them to be banned before the start of the season. And I'm kind of with them on this, because the first thing you'll notice about them at speed is that they shake so much. They flutter like crazy. There was one image of Lewis I used on an article where the T-wing's basically a 20-degree angle of him coming out of the chicane. And I think the FIA are going to be slightly worried about that. So I think they could be gone before the start of the season.
Yeah, I want to see what Craig thinks about that, and also the tyres, because the chat room are talking about the tyres, because Lewis said the tyres are much too hard. Mark Hughes mentioned as much. Paul Wright says Paul Hembree more or less admitted they're too hard. And people suggesting that perhaps Pirelli have failed again. See, I find it too hard to judge Pirelli because I do think they are delivering to order. But what do you think, Craig?
Well, the thing with Pirelli is that they have a contract where they have to create an inferior product. They are a tyre manufacturer and they have to create tyres that either degrade or like lose performance, which is something a tyre company has never had to do in Formula 1 before. So they're always going to be on the back foot with that. And also they have to try and test with the bare minimum track time that they get. They get a bit of a Friday afternoon where they might introduce new tyre compounds towards the end of the year, and they get the young drivers test in the middle of the year. So it's hard for them to create a tyre that delivers what they want to deliver. With Pirelli, it's just they can't win either way they do it. They try so hard to create these tyres that create better racing, and they've had periods of races where it works really well, and the three tyre compound thing in my view works, but they have to create this new larger tyre and have to run it off. This is the first week of them, and they're going to have some negative comments with it. It's just going to happen. They can't have all the drivers saying it's really positive because one or two drivers won't like them. So I think they've done a good enough job. They've got to create something that has to be inferior in a way, and if these drivers are struggling on them or they're finding them not what they expect, then they're going to have to adapt their driving style again, and that's going to create some competition.
The word I've had from drivers is that the new tires are very good. I've only heard positive comments about them. The only negative ones I've heard are about the intermediate tire.
Wait. Which drivers? Because that statement heavily implies that you were schmoozing and whining and dining with Formula One drivers. Tell.
Okay. I know Palmer is a big fan of them. Esteban Ocon really likes them.
Kimi and Massa are the two I'd be interested in, because they were the ones that have been reported to suffer the most from not being able to push the tyres.
I haven't listened to our Kimi interview because I didn't go to that one, but I shall double check that one for you Spanners. But of all the drivers that we've been speaking to, the comments have been very, very positive.
Yeah, well, the issue is going to be very much the effect on strategy. Because with the tires lasting longer, and now what they've done is previously the problem for the teams was keeping the tires in the operating window. If they went out of the window, they were destroyed. And it was specifically asked that not happen. But the end result of that has been tires that last much, much longer. They last much longer. But what we don't have is that crossover and degradation where, like, say, I could run a medium tire, and after 8 or 10 laps, I'm going to be faster than someone on a soft tire. There was a nice little workup on Reddit of times, and we're not seeing the crossover there. And that's potentially problematic. If I can put on a pair of softs and run basically a whole race, one stop, or a pair of mediums, then if there's no advantage to running the mediums, then everybody is going to devolve on just running the soft. And once we have everybody on the same tire and the same strategy, we've actually made the race a little bit less interesting from that point of view. I think that's the fear of people who are looking at it from a technical point of view. Now, it may not work out like that in the real world, because right now all our tire information is very preliminary, and it's also based primarily on running outside of traffic. I mean, you didn't see a lot of cars like trying to get by each other during testing. So this may change it somewhat, but I think that's a big fear right now.
The thing we've got to remember as well is that this is just, you know, it's one preseason test, and we should never, ever, ever read anything into testing times whatsoever.
No, everyone ignore him. Continue your wild speculation, please.
The thing at Mercedes were the only team to do a proper Grand Prix simulation. And the lap times were far slower than certainly I was expecting. They were pretty much on par with what they've been doing, you know, already. So, I you know, the degradation that they would have gotten off of that would have been very unrealistic of what will actually happen in the Grand Prix.
Right, but that actually brings us up to another interesting point that I haven't bothered to investigate yet as fully as I'd like, but that many people are saying that these regulation changes are going to make an even more engine or power unit focused formula. And in particular, we've seen some writing that it could be a real push for the teams energy-wise because the braking zones are shorter and they're faster through the turns. So that without increasing the energy store, like they increased the fuel, extra 5 kilos of fuel to make up for that, but they didn't increase the amount of energy one could store. And as a result, if you're not able to regen energy, you might not see race times that are any faster than last year, but what you will see are quali times that are about 3 to 5 seconds faster.
Great, because that was the problem, not fast enough qualifying.
Well, that certainly wasn't the issue last year because we broke a few qualifying records, but certainly in 2015 when we first came up with these regulation changes, that was the issue. But Matt's absolutely spot on. There is an extra 10% of the lap that is going to be spent at full throttle now. So that already means a lot more stress on the engines and particularly the ERS systems, because it means you're starting to deploy that energy a lot earlier. So it will run out earlier as well. And like you say, braking zones are shorter, so you can regen less. So yeah, it's definitely going to make it more of an engine formula. The fact that we've got this extra 5 kilos of fuel to burn now means that we might actually see them revving past 12,000 RPM, which will be nice, and it'll make them even louder as well.
Yes, I'm sure that will improve the racing massively. In the chat room, Christopher Fonseca says, first time on the live stream, the illusion of how good you all look in my head is broken. Sad face emoji. Well, do you know what, Chris? Yeah, Craig Norman, he's taken that very personally.
Unbelievable.
He's even combed his hair today, Craig Norman, just for the live stream. I thought I'd finally found a camera angle, you know, that got rid of the chins, that gave me, you know, kind of a nice square jaw for once. But that illusion has been broken, and no, Blackout 19, he cannot have comment of the week. Let's start talking about some of the teams in particular. And here's where me and Matt may well fall out, so we don't get the first word on this. This is a section I like to call Why Matt is Wrong. And let's talk about the McLaren Honda performance in testing, because Chris, it's not what they wanted. Go on, no, Matt. Go on, Matt. Stop waving. That's going to irritate me. What do you have to say?
It says why Spanners is wrong in the notes.
That's I edited that. Chris, it's not what they wanted at all, is it?
No, not at all. They have undergone a big redesign for this year. So adopting the split turbo design, like the Mercedes engine, they pioneered that in 2014. And I wouldn't imagine it's the split turbo specifically that's their issue. I think there's still quite a bit of debate about that back at the Honda factory. But yeah, a couple of install laps for Fernando before they had to completely change his engine on Monday. And then Stoffel had a similar issue on Tuesday. And it's effectively cost them 2 days of running, and you only get 8 days of running in preseason testing. So that was definitely an issue. I think what they ended up doing was going back to an older specification engine on certain parts, because it sounded very different on the Wednesday and the Thursday than it did to the Monday and the Tuesday, just so they could get some running in maybe.
You have to look at the fact that this is the third year of an engine partnership that should be now ticking all the boxes, and they should be hitting the bare basics. Yep. If they can't get something like an oil leak sorted out straight away, or you know, it for me, it really frustrates me, because if Honda could just get it right, if they could just build a power unit that works, it would get the aerodynamics working on the McLaren. So because the Honda unit isn't deploying all the power at the right time, or maximum power when they need it, they're then having to develop the chassis in a different way to get more downforce at lower speeds, which is then when the engine does work, they have to then change the chassis back again. For me, it's just this house of cards that just keeps collapsing in on itself. And we had such a positive pre-season with McLaren. They're like, this is the year.
Yep.
This is the year it's going to change. We're going to turn the car orange. Or are we? They spent all winter going, are we going to turn the car orange? And then they did turn the car orange, and we all went, oh, it's orange.
Wow, that's terrible. Why did you do that?
And then we're the sponsors. And now they've finally got this car on track, and it's not on track. They've had five power units used in this test alone. That's crazy. I mean, if I was Fernando Alonso, I'd be calling all of the Le Mans teams up now, just going, any chance of a drive?
But let's go to Matt, because Matt was saying that this year McLaren were definitely going to win the World Constructors' Championship. You said definitely.
No. I think that's one of your alternative facts, my friend.
I maintain my right to do that. But you were much more optimistic, basically, that the change in engine regulations that removed the token restriction that allowed them to basically develop as much as they want would favor them in particular.
Well, it wouldn't favor them. We were talking comparisons to everyone was like, oh, they were a disaster last year. They'll be a disaster this year. I was making the point that the regulations have changed. In previous years, they have been unable to address certain shortcomings baked into the design because of the token system. That is no longer in play.
Do you really think all the restrictions...
If it's a problem, they can fix it.
So do you think that if there was no token system last year, they would already have caught up? Because I can't see that as being the problem. To my mind...
See, you're substituting the one term for the other. I'm not talking about catching up or not catching up. I'm talking about when they identify certain basic design problems.
Right.
With the token system, if they're in certain areas, they can't fix it.
Yeah, but
done, because that system is walled off. That's no longer the case. That doesn't take away from their need to identify the problem and design around it or through it, as you will. But I want to point out something else, is that I heard the oil tank design was a fixable problem, but not until Melbourne. But I also heard that there was a misfiring problem. Is that what you heard, Chris Stevens, too? And do you think it's related to the fact that they're trying to run this new turbulent jet ignition that Mercedes and a couple of the other teams have been on because it's much more efficient?
Well, that system they were running towards the back end of 2016 as well. So I don't necessarily think it's that. The trouble about the misfiring thing as well is it always sounds like it's misfiring. So kind of a hard issue to identify. I've heard pretty much every possible issue you could have with an engine being listed as the potential problem here. So I think at this point, maybe even Honda don't know yet.
Stop waffling, Chris. Let's hear from Craig.
Okay.
So I think that the great thing about McLaren and Honda this year is that they don't have the token system holding them back. So the development rate on these cars this year is going to be phenomenal. We're going to be looking at such an incredible rate of parts coming out of a team. If you have a team like McLaren that has the factory, has the engineers, has the design capabilities to keep bringing parts out to every race, and if Honda have put a substantial budget behind their engine design as well, they're going to improve. They're not going to catch up. They're not going to get faster. They're going to improve. Well, it might get faster, but they'll improve and they'll get over these issues. The trouble is that they've started off on the back foot again.
Yeah.
That is my main problem, is they've not hit the ground running like other teams may have. So I just feel that they've missed 2 days of running compared to everyone else.
Okay, in the chat room, Paul Wright says, I love McLaren, but I don't feel like there's much light at the end of the tunnel at the moment. According to Andy Cowell, says Bahamati Matt, according to Andy Cowell, the token system allows a lot of freedom for development. Though it's removed, Honda can still change the V in the block.
Right, well, let's talk about this McLaren and Honda and their running. Because how many teams are running Honda engines?
One.
One. How many teams are running Renault engines?
Okay, I see your point.
Three. Honda ran 208 laps. Renault ran 770. Honda ran 968 kilometers. Renault, 3,500. So if you just say we had three teams running and multiply out the Honda PU numbers, then they're on a par with what Renault did. They're a little bit behind, but not nearly as much. And they did have a full day of filming that, as far as I'm aware, they didn't suffer any major issues in. Part of the reason this looks so bad is that there's only one team running Honda engines, and that has also, I think, negatively impacted them in terms of their ability to find problems and design solutions.
That doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. That might be a reason. Yes, that's an excuse, and there always seems to be a reason. There always seems to be an excuse. But the point is, they are coming to the F1 party only supplying one team. If it's McLaren that are forcing that to happen, then whatever. That is still what they are coming in with. And Rob Watts has made an interesting comment in the chat room. Rob Watts of Badger GP spoke to someone this week who worked in F1 for more than two decades. His opinion is that Honda are in big trouble and that current issues are linked to more deep-rooted problems with the organization. So they're bringing that to the party as well. And you wonder whether they've got the commitment of F1 because they're just supplying an engine rather than being a works team. So Renault are a works team. They're committed to the sport. Mercedes, the same thing. For me, the lack of engine regulation, the lack of a stopping of development, and the opening up of these token systems favors teams that have been good at developing engines. And you can make all the excuses you want, but at the end of the day, Honda have not been good at developing engines in the hybrid era. Mercedes have been. Therefore, any of these opening up and allowances suit the teams that have been better at it. For whatever reason, Matt, it's not going to suit Honda. They need the restrictions to be more. They need to stop development to let Honda catch up.
Well, no, because again, opening of the token system means any problem discovered can be addressed with design. With the token system, that is not necessarily the case.
All right, then. Let's put our cards on the table then.
They have more ground to cover, so they should theoretically...
It's a big assumption that they have the ability to catch up.
I don't think you can assume either way, depending upon what the problem is, that they will be able to fix it or not. But what you can know for sure is that with the token system, certain systems were unfixable, period, until the end of the regulations, and that is no longer the case. And that has all along been my point.
I think, from my point of view, you're both wrong. It's the problem is that Honda and Mercedes are they're starting from completely different points. Honda have never really built an engine that's been on par, maybe with Renault last year, but not really on par with anything else. And they always seem to start badly. So Mercedes probably have a good understanding of their engine department and have built something that fits around their chassis, while Honda have built something that is a step back. So no matter how much money they pump into it, no matter how many bits they were able to develop, now the token system is gone, they're not starting on a level playing field. And it's for me, that's the big problem.
2014, Renault came in with their hybrid. It was breaking down everywhere. We had Sebastian Vettel not happy, getting out of the car, having little tantrums. As well, Ferrari came in with a heavy power unit. When Honda came in, they had problems. They couldn't get the car going. It was down on power. Mercedes were straight away pretty much flying around the track. Certainly 2015 and last year, they were doing the most miles. They did so many miles on the medium tire that they were going to the medium tire when other people weren't, just because they'd managed that many miles in testing. And you say, oh, well, we can't write Honda off. We have evidence to say that they cannot get their act together with this power unit, and I cannot see it getting any better.
And that reliability in the preseason ensured that no Mercedes power unit broke down during the season and the rightful person won the championship.
Well, if it wasn't for the conspiracy, you'd be right. Tell you what, then, talking about winning the championship, let's look to the current champions. Mercedes, they're sandbagging the hell out of that car, aren't they, Matt? Come on.
Yeah, I mean, they did break a track record, I think, with Bottas, who was the fastest all week. Not that that means anything. Or wait, you said it did mean something, didn't you? I can't remember now. Yeah, there's obviously a lot left in the bag for Mercedes, I think, power unit wise, and it's going to be interesting to see how they play this going into Melbourne.
From what I understand, Renault have barely turned up their engine. It is maybe not even 75% they're running at for this first week, and they're kind of steadily bringing up. Basically, everybody is sandbagging, effectively. Mercedes, most definitely. Ferrari, we definitely haven't seen their full potential. Red Bull, no way. And also, you got to remember, these cars are going to be so different by the time they get to Melbourne. We all had the launch spec cars that looked quite basic and maybe were slightly underwhelming to some fans. The second test is going to be more and more upgrades, and then the first race, they're going to be very different.
I'd quickly just have to go to Josh Simpkin's comment there, because he said the fact that Eric Boullier is publicly doubting the Honda partnership is already a big sign on the wall. But the fact that they did that press statement together, the Honda and the McLaren, and they said, you know, the old chairman's vote of confidence, that instantly reminded me of every football sacking I've ever seen. Sorry about that. Go back to what you're going to say about Mercedes, Craig.
So with Mercedes, from what I gather from talking to people in the paddock as well, is that it looks great on the soft tyre, but when it switches to the medium, it gets a bit twitchy. And that's something that they might have some inherent understeer in there that may be based on the aeros that they've had to develop this year with the shark fins and things like that, which, by the way, I don't have a problem with the shark fins. I think they're fine. The T-wings I have a problem with, but the shark fins I don't. But when they switch from the soft to the medium, the car gets a little bit understeer. You saw it with Bottas. On the harder tyre compounds, they've probably got to dial out a little bit there. But this is what these days are for. They've got an engine and a package that we all know is going to be lightning quick when it comes to Melbourne. So they've just got to get these little bits out of the way before they start turning the wick up.
I think that might be a kind of very specific issue because speaking to Pirelli, the comments they've had from the teams and the drivers is that between the compounds, the balance doesn't change as much as it used to. So they're predicting kind of in pit stops, less fiddling about with the front wing when they come in and they switch compounds. But like you say, you know, it's incredibly early days. So, I mean, and that's what testing is for.
All right. Tell you what, let's talk to Craig.
Oh, no, you missed the apex.
Craig, Badger GP is always doing fun things. And one of the fun things you start pre-season and do all the way through the season is a fantasy league. Now, I used to do the old football fantasy leagues, and I could never be bothered to do the substitutions to keep 11 men on pitch and keep track. But with a Formula One team of two, surely that's a lot simpler for me to keep my fantasy team. So I'll have Wehrlein, Hamilton, and Mercedes win.
Well, if we had the game like that, then it wouldn't be very fun to play, would it? And unfortunately, it's slightly different than that. But yes, today I can reveal that we have launched our Fantasy Grand Prix game for the 2017 season. Well, if you head to fantasygp.com, you'll be able to see the game in all its glory. You can sign up starting from today, in which that you have a budget of $75 million to pick three drivers and three teams from the Formula One grid. Now, obviously, the best teams and drivers are priced at a very high rate. So Lewis Hamilton is the most expensive driver in the game at $22 million. So a hefty chunk of your budget will go on him there. But you'll score points through the drivers and constructors points. So whatever points the team or driver pick up throughout the season, they score. You also score points through drivers getting bonus points. So depending on where they start on the grid, for every position they finish above their starting position, they get a bonus of 3 points. And you can also do a prediction. So if you predict the podium and get it right in order, as well as pole position, fastest lap, and number of safety cars, and the first to retire this year as well, you also get bonus points for them. So it's a lot of variables in there. We've had thousands of players over the years. So I think we had topped out of 9,000 players last year. We had Jenny Gow involved, Will Buxton involved, and Simon Lazenby involved. So it's a free game to sign up to. We do offer a pro membership in which you could donate some money towards the running of the website. In doing so, you gain $5 million towards your budget. So you have $80 million to spend. And you also receive access to all the stats involved in the game. So you can start doing a little bit of analysis to decide who you're going to pick for pole position or who you're going to pick for your cheaper drivers, because we'll have a cheap driver on your team. And yeah, that's pretty much it. It launched today. We've had a massive sign up already, and it's really worth getting involved.
We've got a team.
Just you.
It's called We Might Be Wrong But First. I think it's called Wrong But First, and it was started in the live stream by Patrick Green, who's part of our Slack group, and he's been corralling people in our Facebook group. So I don't know how many are signed up, but we'll be in it. So how do we win, and what do we get when we win? A trophy, girls, cocaine?
None of the above. I think we have several prizes that we give out throughout the year as well. So if you're lucky enough to become the highest scoring player in a Grand Prix, you win one of several items. We have our own merchandise company called Box Box Box, which you might get a t-shirt or something along those lines. We have mugs as well. So we have mugs where every year we have a mug that goes out to winners. We're still finalizing a few prizes for who wins the overall championship. But we, in past games, we've given away single seat experiences to Silverstone. We've given away tickets to Grand Prix, things along those lines. So there's a lot of things out there if you take part in, and all the information is on fantasygp.com.
BadgerGP.com. No, can we find it from there?
FantasyGP.com. Okay. It is on a brand new server and website for the 2017 season.
But you yourself can be found all over the internet, of course. If people like you, they can find you.
They can find me on Twitter, at CraigNormanF1. They can find me any work that I've done on badgergp.com /Craig, which is my author page. That's a bit out of date now. I haven't done anything recently due to man flu. And that's where you can find me on the big bad internet.
Excellent, excellent. Absolutely fantastic. And speaking of our Slack group, where Patrick Green rallied us to join the Badger GP Fantasy Group, why not join in with the Slack group? It's kind of been a mix between a WhatsApp chat and an internet forum. People like Matt, myself, Vortex, Ferret, we're all in there. And that is a place for our patrons who support the show to come and join in with us. I have to say, we've had a little bit of an uptake in our patrons recently. It's really, really helped, especially with the computer dying last week. It's covered all the running costs. Missed Apex podcast is literally brought to you by the patrons, and we really, really appreciate your support. And Matt, it's been fantastic fun hanging out with them in that Slack group. That's like my go-to little break thing that I have now through the day.
Yeah, it's especially delightful because they tend to agree with me and not you.
Shocking. Shocking if true. Which I don't think it is. So if you want to get involved in that, or you want to support us, just go to patreon.com/... Oh, I don't know that. I think it's Missed Apex. Just go to patreon.com and search Missed Apex podcast. And I won't do what another Formula One podcast does, which, by the way, is outstripping us massively on Patreon. I want to catch up to them. And imply that somehow you owe us, because, well, what they said was, we've given you the first 5 years free. Why, we paid for the first 5 years. Why don't you pay for the next 5 years? And I found that a little bit. I found that a little bit much. I don't want to call them out because obviously we find podcasts on the understanding that they are free and it always will be free. It's like the street performer who catches you in the street, does a magic trick and then wants money, or the guy who washes your window screen and then demands cash for the service you didn't ask. So no. Oh, no, maybe they do, Matt. Maybe we got it wrong.
No, we did not get it wrong. We got it right. They are greedy bastards. Oops, can I say that?
Come on, just let me catch up with those unnamed people. I want to beat them. Come on, let's beat them. Speaking of people who want to beat other people, Ferrari, lot of chat from Mr. Wilson. Do you know this fella, Mr. Wilson, Irish boar on Twitter, one of our listeners, interacts with us a lot, very nice guy, actually did a nice YouTube video telling us why Max Verstappen was good or bad, I can't remember which way, talented man anyway. He insists that this is Kimi Raikkonen, he's back, he's already proved he's back, and he's on it, he's going to beat Vettel this year.
That's a big claim, that's the biggest claim I've heard so far.
I'd love to know what the evidence is to say he's already back.
Well, basically, he topped a couple of the days, didn't he, where he got a slightly faster time than Vettel.
Means nothing. Means absolutely nothing.
I think you have to commend Ferrari in the fact that they've actually got their heads down and had a good first test. Like, there's no infighting. There's no complaints about the car by the drivers. There's no sheepishness from any of the designers. There's no Italian rage that something's gone wrong. It's very un-Ferrari-like that they've managed to get the car all settled down and in a decent position. And I commend them for the fact that they've actually gone down a really solid development route, a unique development route. They've not gone out to try and copy the leading car on the grid. They've actually gone down something that they want to do. So, you know, who knows? This may be Ferrari season. I can't believe I just said that. It might be Ferrari season.
Well, they were the only ones who had zero issues, if I'm not entirely mistaking that. Oh, Chris, you want to jump in on that?
Well, Vettel did stop on track on Wednesday, right outside the media center, and every single journalist in the room piled over to the window trying to get a view from it. But my understanding is that was actually a kind of running out of fuel test, and it wasn't actually an issue on the car. So certainly no dramas, put it that way.
Yeah, because even Mercedes didn't run the morning of the wet test because they had an electrical issue, supposedly.
Meant that Lewis didn't go out all morning. I can't imagine it's a major issue for them, though, because Friday's running was pretty much moot because of this wet weather test.
Yeah, but still, Ferrari being the only one without an officially announced issue, that kind of says something. And of course, the suspension attack.
Oh, this, you know, teams are getting checked now. They're getting the inspections from the FIA. And so far from my digging, no team has been pulled up on it just yet.
Yeah, but it's pretty obvious if you watch Red Bull run that there is a remarkable amount of flattening that happens in a straight line above a certain speed that all but disappears when they break for the corner. So whether or not that runs afoul of the technical directive they've released, I don't know. But it's obvious that all of the teams, or at least the top teams, are playing games with rake in a straight line to help with efficiency and basically with efficiency. Yeah.
Well, we asked Toto and Aldo Costa about this at the Mercedes launch at Silverstone, and they have got no worries about it whatsoever because the rules about suspension haven't changed over 2016 to 2017.
I love this. I love the new Chris Stevens, who's like on it and at the test. Yeah, it's just talking to Toto. Just drop that bomb in and walk away. Love it. I mean, obviously, it could have happened to a lot nicer person, but there you are in that position of privilege. Where can people find you on the internet, Chris? And where can people follow your, you know, your live stream teleprompter type thing?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter at cstevens_journo. And yeah, all the written work, it's at formulaspy.com.
I mean, you do a live thing like the BBC do where you type in, oh my goodness, Vettel's crashed. I have no strong opinion on that either way.
Well, it's just meant to be a factual, you know, text update. So yeah, we do. Yeah, regular updates on that.
Yeah, but you've got to beat BBC. So I want some personality on that next week or I'm switching back to the BBC feed.
I can't rely on your friendly support, man. That's harsh.
You could for test one, but now I want to see you deliver. Come on, deliver. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about money, money, money. Can't buy you grip. Craig, is it as bad as it looks for Mr. Lance Stroll? Because he came off like three times in the course of 2 days. And okay, fair enough. Somebody did make a great point on the BBC feed that I definitely wasn't watching because I was watching the Formula Spy feed that said, hey, lay off him. Driving a Formula One car is meant to be hard for a rookie. But my worry is, why is he pushing past his limit on his very first week on a test in a Formula One car?
Because if you don't do it now and you do it in China or Bahrain, you get absolutely hammered by everyone involved. You might as well just go and get yourself, you know, have a few offs here and there. That's what testing's for. Get yourself bedded in so you know what's going on. And then when you get to the nitty gritty of it all and you're in ninth place in the Grand Prix or eighth place in the Grand Prix, which is where Williams are probably going to be this year, then you get those points in the bag. Now, you know, Lance Stroll's going to take a lot of stick this year because of the money he's bringing to the team. But this guy is rapid. This guy has driven really well in lower formula. So he knows how to drive a race car.
All right.
He's not a mid-90s playboy who jumped in a car and drove around Monaco and was 10 seconds off the pace. This guy knows how to drive a single-seater race car. He was unlucky. The website has Lance Stroll crashed yet.com was a little bit harsh.
It's a little bit previous, isn't it?
But I guess if the guy also owned Has Maldonado Crash Yet.com, he's obviously got a lot of time on his hands. It could go one way or the other. If Lance Stroll's going to be a crash kid, then fantastic. We need something like that in the sport. We need people to have that venting and outlook after Maldonado's departure. But on the other hand, let this guy just get iron all these little bits out now so he gets used to the 2017 cars. And then we go move forward.
Stop you there, lads. Just got a bit of weird interference. Hopefully that's the last we'll hear of it. But Matt, come on. Yeah. Okay. Push the limit straight away. But when the limit's the wall and it costs you a day's testing.
Yeah. And you know who defended him? Can you believe it?
Was it Donald Trump?
Lewis Hamilton.
Oh, Lewis Hamilton. Really? Go on. What did Lewis say?
Said, don't pick on the lad. It's harder than you think. What's that, Mr. Stevens? You have something to say?
I do. I feel for Lance. I really do.
That poor guy.
You identify with young incompetence?
It's about time he caught a break in his life, isn't it?
No, I mean, the thing is, a lot of his critics on social media, I'm pretty sure I've never seen him turn a wheel in his life.
No, and it's jealousy. I'll admit that. I'm jealous as hell of the kid.
The thing about Lance is that he was compromised by a need to find the limit, but save the car because Williams had a lack of developmental parts, which to me, it sounds like a bit of a misjudgment from them. It really does, because you can't expect Lance to not break a few bits in his first public outing in the car where he needs to find the limit. So I'd say that's a misjudgment from him. The thing about Lance as well, you know, it coming up from F3 to F1, he's already skipped two junior categories there. But with this huge jump in pace we're expecting in the 2017 cars, it's more like three effectively. I think it was Sergio Perez who described the going from a 2016 to a 2017 car is basically like stepping from GP2 to Formula One again. So it's a big shock to the system. And, you know, I mean, one spin cost him 3/4 of a day's running. I think, you know, he's doing all right. The really interesting thing about the day that people really kind of got the hump with him on the Wednesday, Stroll, he admitted liability to that first crash that was like right at the end of the morning session where he ended up in the gravel. But his turn 5 crash that wrote him out for the rest of the day and wrote them off for the Friday as well because of the damage to the chassis, said in a Q&A session afterwards that there was an issue on the car that made him crash. The word he used was victim.
Oh, dear.
However, now this is where it gets really interesting. But other people in that Q&A who worked for the team did not echo those comments.
And this is the thing where it's just he doesn't know the established Formula One protocol, which is in an accident like that, the driver first off says, oh, it's my fault. And then the team says, oh, no, it's our fault.
Yeah, they're very British.
Letting
yes.
nobody know what really happened.
So from what I heard about that crash is that he went a little bit wide and just kept his foot in, which just shows a little bit of, well, some people may say bravery, but it might be a little bit of inexperience.
Well, hang on, you're flip-flopping all over the place. Craig, you're flip-flopping all over the place now. I said that he was being too gung-ho, and you said, oh, no, that's fine, he's got to do it.
Well, I just think the first two spins at turn 3 was what set him up for that, because I think he just went, I need to just try and save one.
Yeah.
So I don't look too much of a fool, and he went a little bit too over the edge. I think long term the guy's going to be safe in Formula One. I think it's just had, you know, anybody that has more than 2 crashes in the first test is going to be the one that gets the finger pointed at, and it just happened to be the guy that's everyone's already pointing the finger at because of the money.
Michael Evers in the chat room says this is the weakest lineup this year: Massa and Stroll. He could have a point just because of inexperience, and then somebody on the very other end of that. But welcome to the chat room. A lot of new guys in there. If you want to join us on the chat room, the easiest way is to go to spannersready.com/livestream, and you'll see the link to my channel. Or you can just go on YouTube and search Spanners Ready. And we do try now to give you alerts, and we try to be consistent to be 8 p.m. on Sundays. Don't worry about what we're competing with on TV. Don't look. I promise it's terrible. You can trust me. But also make sure that you subscribe to that YouTube channel and you'll get a notification of the live stream. Or why not follow Downforce Radio on Facebook, and you'll also get a notification when we go live on there.
Yeah, well, I don't know. For the first crash, like I was looking at it, he went a little bit wide, caught the grass, turned it. I mean, I saw other drivers off in that same fashion, not break their cars. So for the first off, it's like kind of a bad beat in poker. Like,
yeah, you know, no, I get that.
But winding up in the wall like that, when you know your team has no spare parts and there's another day's running, that just seems like poor judgment, let's say. But I think my favorite comment is from Lakes Boy, who said, yeah, leave Stroll alone. He does drive fast. Granted, into the barriers, but still.
And that's from the Slack group. I'm glad you were monitoring that. Bahamatimat, I'm just going to go for it. I'm just going to be brave. If you're going to slash hard, says, I saw his post-accident interview and his answers seemed entitled. And that's the fear. That is the fear coming from that kind of background, that he's going to maybe give himself a bad impression if he continues to talk like that. Chris, you're going to defend that?
No, I'm sort of going to run a little bit parallel to it, because I spoke to him after the first crash, the one at turn 9.
Did. You're like a
la-di-da.
Yeah.
Look at me, I'm Chris.
Oh, the jealousy is just wonderful.
It is. I'm so jealous.
But no, he was incredibly nervous and jittery after that. I think it may have been, a lot of media pressure for him, because he knew that he was going to get asked these very awkward and painful questions of, is it your inexperience? Are they going to bring up the whole pay driver tag again? You had this private testing as well. Is it going to compromise the rest of your testing? And he was just so very reserved, and he has these sort of mannerisms that he keeps sort of doing. He keeps sort of like scratching his neck and sort of fiddling with his hands a bit. He really isn't kind of up to speed, if you pardon the pun. in the sort of Formula One world yet.
Well, he's a young man. He's a rookie. I mean, people get nervous in front of camera, and I suppose this is the culmination of his dreams. I can't really blame him for being a bit nervous in front of camera.
Well, are we looking at another Kvyat when he got demoted situation here? Do you think, Chris?
I don't think it's that bad. I think Stroll has the potential to be a fantastic racing driver. And I think given a little bit of time, he can become that.
I think what this also does do is take it sort of deflects away the attention that Williams may have a really tough year this year. They had a torrid time, really, in terms of a test, because outside of the first day, they didn't have an experienced driver in the car. Massa did the first day, you know, solid morning, and then they managed to improve the pace in the afternoon. But Massa should have done, they should have had 2 days straight with Massa just to get a little bit more experience in the car, a little bit more development, a little more understanding of what's going on. Because they're pretty much in the same place as McLaren now in terms of running. And that's a dangerous place to be in.
Paul Wright in the chat room says maybe he was nervous meeting the famous Chris Stevens. Come in, Tiffany.
I love it. It's all about me.
Matt, I've run out of steam as far as organising the show goes. Of the remaining teams, who do you want to talk about, apart from being incorrect about the Haas paint job?
I'm totally correct about the Haas paint job.
You are not. It looks like a tank. It's a fighter jet on wheels. I love it. Oh, Chris is going to say a thing.
Oh, gosh, look at him.
I agree with Spanners. Yay! I can't believe I've said this.
We're best friends now.
It actually looks pretty sweet. And do you know what? They were actually one of the surprises of the test for me. They ran really well.
Yeah, well, you know who else ran well? I think Renault ran very, very well. I was kind of impressed with them. Who else can we talk? You know,
can I just mention something about Palmer's spin on the Wednesday, I think it was?
Yeah.
Like a very, very pathetic spin. Because it was just as soon as he went anywhere near the throttle, the back end just stepped away. I just want to point out the track temperature was about 12 degrees when he did that. It was freezing cold that morning.
Yeah.
Really, I can't blame him for it.
So we're suddenly all over the place a little bit. But I do want to address Palmer because, okay, he's had his year to bed in now. Palmer's destiny is to be the next great British hope. You know, of the generation coming through, it's Julian Palmer. This is his moment to shine. He's like the next, you know, you grow up with, what have we had? We've had, in my lifetime, Mansell, who gave way to Hill. Then we've had Coulthard. And even when Coulthard wasn't doing a lot, he was still the British / Scottish when he lost Guy. You know, and then you had people coming through. Then you had Jensen, Lewis Hamilton. And now it's Palmer's turn to kind of embed himself as a British fan favourite. But he's got to do it this season, Craig, hasn't he?
Yeah, well, in alongside all those names you mentioned, we also had Ralph Furman, Anthony Davidson, Max Chilton. Like he, I know what you mean. Through default, he is the next in line.
I don't think Palmer's Chilton-esque, though, is he? He's a cut above that.
Well, Chilton had a good run in his first year at Marussia. He had a good run of non-retirements.
Oh, so, yes, well,
know, don't knock Max Chilton. But I can see where you are. Like,
I don't think it's hopeless, Craig. I don't think it's hopeless for Palmer this season.
I completely agree with you. I don't think it is at all. I think what you need to look at is that Palmer has had doors open for him in how other drivers have moved along. So Grosjean leaving Renault to go to Haas sort of created that vacuum there that he stepped into. And now Hülkenberg's come across as well. Now Magnussen left there. You could have argued that Magnussen and Hülkenberg would have been a better team than Palmer and Hülkenberg, but Magnussen decided to leave. So Palmer's there. In my view, he's there through default. So I know he performed well towards the second half of last year. I'm not going to take that away from him, but I do feel that this is a really tough season for him. He's up against Hülkenberg, who's extremely consistent in a car that will, I think, was the dark horse of the grid, really. They had a really good, solid first test. They didn't have any issues. They put the miles on. I think Palmer's going to struggle.
Okay, so in the chat room, quickly, Christopher Fonseca says, Craig, quickly, where do you think Palmer ranks next to, say, Sam Bird?
I think Sam Bird's been extremely unlucky. I think that Sam Bird has slightly more natural talent than Palmer. I'm not saying Palmer's bad, but I think Palmer's had the breaks.
The chat room's been pretty harsh on Palmer, to be honest. Palmer, just another paid driver. But Rob Watts comes in with unpopular opinion alert. I think Jolyon could be, and it is Jolyon, isn't it? Could be a pleasant surprise this season. He'll run Hülkenberg closer than many expect. And a young Mr. Matt Trumpet says, I agree. And Baha Mati Hayamat says, heretic. So, Chris, where do you stand?
I agree with Robin and Matt. I think also having Hülkenberg alongside him this year will help him as well kind of get up to speed. Because I don't think Kevin Magnussen was maybe the best teammate for him in his rookie year. We know that in his GP2 days, he took a little bit of time to get up to speed. And in the second half of the season last year, he was, on top of K-Mag a lot of the time. For K-Mag, this is kind of a make or break year. If he doesn't really deliver, then he could be out pretty quickly. So I think that's maybe where the kind of misguidance about Palmer has come in as well. I think, you know, he's got Hülkenberg, a known quantity alongside him now. So I think that's a good benchmark for him to go up against this year.
Okay, so Hannah Hassel in the chat room says, what have I missed? And I know full well that the reason you're not in the chat is because you're watching Call the Midwife or something like that. So don't come running back in here after just because what Call the Midwife has finished, asking us what you've missed. Well, you've missed Matt being wrong a lot about a lot of things. You've missed the realization that Chris Stevens is now basically a celebrity. So when we were darting about all over the place, we skipped over Haas. Did you want to go back to that, Matt?
Yeah, in the sense that they're on their own this year, or much more on their own than last year. What does that look, Chris? And they have done a better job than you might have thought. But for me personally, I think they're going to find it hard to replicate last year's results because the rest of the midfield is blazing, quite frankly.
I agree with that very much, Matt. The face was, you reminded me of a point that I wanted to bring up about Toro Rosso, who after this kind of phase of becoming more independent are now sort of slightly moving back to Red Bull in terms of their shared parts for next year. It's more kind of about not performance parts, more the kind of just standard parts, parts you don't really see on a car, but they're starting to share those more as a cost-saving measure. Not that it's really going to make a difference to how the team performs, but in terms of cost, it's a big saving.
Yeah, but let's continue to talk about James Key and the fact that once again, Toro Rosso has turned up with a thing on their car that nobody else has and many people are likely to copy. And I just got to say, aside from liking Carlos Sainz because he has my number and the livery in general, they always impress me as being very much along the lines of Force India in that they do a great deal of good with what amounts to a relatively tiny budget.
If I can go back to Haas, I think that they're looking really professional this year. I think they had a really solid first test. But this brake issue just won't go away. We got through all the way through that first test. Yeah. First test, and then immediately turn to, well, you know, we're going to stick with this brake supplier and then we'll try this one later on in the year. And I'm like, this is still going on. This is still happening. Come on, if the brakes aren't working, find ones that do. Let's stop beating around the bush.
Because
here,
the big puffs of smoke, like the one down the back straight in Malaysia, we could go on. It's that's when you think it's systemic, and Matt's cat on his shoulder creeping up to be part of the podcast is hilarious. Worth joining the live stream on its own. Yeah, what's going on with those brakes? Anyway, Matt. Oh, sorry, Chris.
I just wanted to say about Haas is they made a comment this week about, oh my God, that cat is adorable. Sorry. the comment they made about Ferrari's engine, which is apparently a big step up. And, you know, you can kind of tell just by kind of listening to it trackside, you could tell which cars have got the new engine and which ones have got the 2016 engine purely from the volume. The new one is so much louder than the 2016 engine.
Yeah, are they running that modified Mercedes exhaust that they designed last year? The exhaust, the shape of the exhaust outlet looks different to me than it did previously.
I didn't get a chance to compare the Sauber, Haas and Ferrari exhausts. I'm going to write that down actually and get on to that.
Chat room says cat. and that's a fair reflection. Matt, we're running short on time, so why don't you hone us in on what you want to talk about. In fact, you were just mentioning Toro Rosso and James Key and them turning up. Was that one of your two things? Because
I have, well, that was my big thing for Toro Rosso, is that yet again, they have a clever design bit that nobody else has thought of.
Well, didn't Mercedes turn up with that same one as well? And James Key made a comment saying it was actually kind of a relief to see that at least one other team had gone down the line we were thinking. But would you mind just explaining quickly what that was?
It was basically an aerodynamic bit. And honestly, I didn't even bother to research it because I figured we would just be briefly mentioning these sorts of things.
No, so we need summers. We need summers, don't we? Yeah.
More they'd like to bring to it, I wouldn't argue with it.
No, but you roll to what you wanted to talk about.
Well, I think one thing we haven't really talked about at all is Force India, which I have defined as F ugly, but F unctional, as it were.
Thing is, when the car looks that unattractive, it's just got to dance a little harder to get my attention on the dance floor. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, well, isn't there always that design thing of it? Cars that look fast are fast. And the Force India looks more like a German tank.
It looks like the end of a crash test. That's what it looks like, Craig.
But this year's Force India looks like they asked a 12-year-old to draw last year's Force India. And this is what I came up with.
How did it look on track, Chris?
Very meh.
Oh.
Very meh.
But hang on, wasn't VJ Mallya saying, ignore those people chasing me, we are going to finish second or something?
I can't see
that. He was being super optimistic, though, about, and mind you, Toro Rosso is saying they're going to be top of the midfield, but Force India definitely saying, yeah, it looks rubbish, but we're going to surprise a few people. You'd say no.
I'd say fifth is maybe the best they can hope for this year.
I think they're going to struggle this year. They're not going to maximize the budget. They had 3 years of just optimizing, and now we're at a new budget level. They're going to struggle.
Yeah, and prize money aside, I'll tell you who did kind of impress me, though, and that is Team Clean, otherwise known as Sauber. But for those of us who read the Auto Motor und Sport feed, Sauber is always translated as clean. And in particular, Giovinazzi was like an amazing revelation. And I'm wondering, do you think he might be a wear line killer there, Chris?
Well, he certainly did a very great job, especially when you consider he only stepped inside a Formula One car for the first time in the middle of February.
Unlike certain other rookies at the test in certain other white cars?
Yes, that's a very nice statement. This is the thing about Wehrlein, actually, is we were supposed to have word on whether he's driving the second test or not by now, and we haven't, which certainly isn't a good sign. So I think at this rate he's going to miss the second test and go into the first race maybe with no preseason testing under his belt.
Ouch. But I'll tell you, they did something else that was really nice, is they also signed Tatiana Calda as their reserve driver, and I am incredibly stoked about this.
Yeah, I'm really happy about it as well. I can't say I've kept an eye on her massively. Obviously, she's on, you know, a lot of people's radar. But I think it's a great opportunity for her. And obviously, it's a great opportunity for, you know, just to showcase women in motorsport once again.
Yeah, and let's not forget, we just celebrated the passing of Lella Lombardi just a day or two ago, the last woman to score points in Formula One. And it would be great to see her get some actual, unlike Simona, get some actual seat time and be treated as a proper driver. Hopefully Sauber, with Ericsson's money, is now sort of beyond the driver lotto that they were playing a couple of years ago.
I think with Sauber as well is that they've got a bit of a secret weapon in Ruth Buscombe on the pit wall. So I have this theory that Ruth really understands these Pirelli tyres, and the fact that she was at Ferrari in 2015, which managed to secure 3 wins based on tyre strategy. She was at Haas at the start of last year and managed to oversee them finishing 6th and 5th at the start of the season. And then she disappeared from that team for a little bit and then reappeared at Sauber last year. And you saw Ericsson perform a heroic stint at, I think it was America, where he finished 9th after running a massive stint on the hard tyres, and then oversaw the point scoring at Brazil, which managed to get them into that 9th place. So they may be trying some tricky stuff in terms of strategy this year just to get them that little bit further up the grid, because, you know, technically, statistically, and probably financially, they're bottom of the pile right now. So they need everything they can get.
Matt, you were being asked by the chat room to just clarify Tatiana Calderon's position within Sauber.
Yes, they are asking me to confirm it, and I am in the process of trying to figure out which one it was. Although, if somebody knows for sure, feel free to jump in.
I think Rob Watts from Badger in the chat room as well is saying she may get some test time later in the year, but that depends on her results in GP3. That sounds really positive. I like the way they're talking about her.
Her role is effectively to do the sim runs. There'll be quite a bit of work on that. She'll also attend a few Grand Prix as well and kind of have some one-to-one time with the engineers.
Sorry, I'm arguing with someone in the chat room.
Fair enough. And Paul Wright, I'm just going to say, no, that's not her position. Don't do that. All right, boys, I think we are coming to a natural end. Let's just say that comment of the week went to an early comment from Blackout19, who I believe has actually won this several times, but unfortunately he's knocked it out of the park one more time.
Comment of the week.
Blackout19 says, on the bright side, at least McLaren don't have any sponsors to upset.
Comment of the week.
Matt, you have things to plug, and you've not had anything to plug on a podcast for about 2 weeks. So what are you up to these days? I know your wife is in the final stages of one of her latest novels, and very interesting following her at Amanda Weaver Writes, because she's very open about the writing process. And given the nature and subject of her writing, that can be quite eye-watering at times.
Yeah, well, you know, as with everything else, it's kind of an up and a down thing. I think she's got her historical trilogy that's out. Starts with A Duchess in Name, which I think might be on sale for 99 cents. So if you've been waiting for that moment to distract your spouse and a cat is too expensive, then I can highly recommend going out and buying my wife's books instead, because they will certainly do the job once the Grand Prix start rolling around.
A Duchess in Name, and that is by at Amanda Weaver Writes. Matt, are you promoting your cat as well? That's been so distracting. You can't have that adorable cat on the live stream anymore.
He's figured out how to open the door to my office, unfortunately.
Okay.
How much I can do.
Fair enough. Dear listener, if you've made it this far, we can assume you enjoy listening to this podcast. Why not make sure you subscribe on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice? If you are unsure how to subscribe, and I know some people are, go to Twitter and follow at MissedApexF1, and all the instructions are on the pinned post there, on the pinned tweet, in fact, Matt. What have Badger got coming up, Craig?
So this week we're going to have an exclusive interview with Johnny Herbert, Martin Brundle, and Damon Hill that Rob Watts put together last Friday. And if you head back through the website, last week we had an interview with Craig Scarborough about this year's regulations, as well as a few other interesting articles on there. So, yeah, keep your eyes peeled. Not only is the Fantasy Grand Prix game launched, but we've started to get some really great content going up.
And, Chris, you're leaving on a jet plane.
Yeah. Maybe. No. Wait, what?
Are you not going to bar test 2?
No, budget doesn't extend that far, unfortunately. So I will be sitting out the second test, I'm afraid. But my paddock work will continue for the year. I've actually got I worked out this week. I am essentially keeping an eye on 41 different series this year.
So it's not all glamour and glory. I look forward to hearing from the Lawnmower Championships that take place in Kent every year. No doubt you and Jake Sanson will be covering that. So follow me at Spanners Ready. Find all my stuff at www.spannersready.com. Support Missed Apex at www.com. No, that's wrong. That's not how web addresses work. www.patreon.com. And search for Missed Apex. Why not support Downforce Radio, the nation's motorsport station? And make sure you visit badgergp.com, because F1 isn't boring. And due to the fact that YouTube make a claim every single time I play Fallen to Flux on YouTube, unfortunately, I'm going to have to stop using them on the live stream. So don't be jarred by the different ending to this week's show. And just remember that wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. This was Missed Apex. It's not the same. Fallen to Flux. It's TuneCore's fault. Everyone at TuneCore and say, leave Missed Apex podcast alone. We have the rights to use at Fallen to Flux. I don't like it. It makes me feel like I'm about to get
this
shot
song is
in a
rubbish
Western.
To headbang to. You cannot headbang to this song.
Why don't you use one of my tunes?
I don't know. Do you do heavy? I want a heavy metal. I want Fallen to Flux, and TuneCore have ruined everything. They're the biggest ruiners ever.
You can use my my lean angle outro. Is it working?
Yeah, it's on. We'll roll with this.
See, this is the part where you say words to outro the show. And
wounds
then
heal, chick stick scars, and glory lasts forever. This is Mist Apex, who just watched the Batman Lego movie. Plug the band, Chris.
Oh, that is a good friend of mine, Rob, who is in the band Tennyson, who lets us use his music on Lean Angle.
Okay, don't take it against him that he's Chris's friend.